The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway this morning. Honored to have Speaker Mike Johnson back with me. Good morning, Mr. Speaker. Welcome back.
Hugh, thanks so much. It's really great to be with you, my friend.
You are now doing a syndicated show with Salem every Saturday with Tony Perkins. How do you like being a radio guy?
I'm going back to my roots. Many years ago, I was a small-time radio host, and I miss that work, actually.
It's much better than doing TV because the talent are actually the producers, although our friend Tom Tradup is helping you and Tony get that going. Mr. Speaker, first, congratulations on the National Security Funding Bill. It passed the Senate yesterday. Are you satisfied that we've done right by our allies?
I don't have any question about that, Hugh. I know that history is going to judge this well. It was the right thing to do. This is a very dangerous time. We truly do have a new axis of evil. You have China and Russia and Iran and often North Korea working together in coordination. They're funding one another's aggressions. And the reason you and I both know, and you highlight this all the time, the reason this is happening is because the current president is projecting weakness on the world stage, and our adversaries are acting aggressively and provocatively and taking advantage of that. So we had this moment in time, Hugh, this historic question: would America stand by our allies, stand by Israel, the beleaguered people of Ukraine in this pivotal moment, or would we shrink back and in my view, abdicate our obvious responsibility and role in the world? I don't believe we need to be the world's policeman. I don't believe that is our burden. But I do believe that the perception of a strong America is essential on the world stage. And I think the Congress has acted to make sure that happens.
Earlier in the show, I talked with former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who applauds the national security bill as well. He also brought up, and I discussed with him, Secretary Blinken is thinking about sanctioning a unit of the Israeli Defense Forces. If that happens, Mr. Speaker, would you bring forward some sort of resolution condemning Tony Blinken? Because we have to stand with our allies. We cannot be cherry-picking instances where we think they've done something wrong. What would you think about the State Department sanctioning an IDF unit?
Well, I would be opposed to that, of course. And we heard a rumor of this before our bill was actually brought for the vote in the House. I mean, hours before. And I'll tell you what I did, Hugh, and I guess I'm breaking news here. No one knows this, but I called the White House immediately and talked with Jake Sullivan and Tony Blinken was overseas at the moment. But I made him send me an email where he committed to me in writing that it would not affect any of the funding that we were working on to assist Israel in this critical time, and that they would be very judicious in that. He has indicated to me that that won't happen, that there were some allegations of some event many years ago. It seems to have been resolved, and I am very hopeful that they won't try to proceed on that. If they do, we'll intervene.
It will undercut completely our position standing by Israel. And you are going to Colombia today, and let's talk about that. I applaud this. Yesterday, I recommended President Trump go up there after the trial lets out. But, of course, he's under the thumb of the judge, which is unconstitutional, but that's the way it is. Why are you going to Colombia? Who are you going to talk to, and what are you going to say?
Well, today I'm going to join Jewish students at Colombia and Rabbi Yehuda Drizin for a meal. And then we'll be hosting a press conference there with some of my colleagues from the House, Republicans from New York. To call on the president of the university to resign, it's unconscionable. This president Shafiq is shown to be a very weak and inept leader. They cannot even guarantee the safety of Jewish students. They're expected to run for their lives and stay home from class. It's maddening. What we're seeing on these college campuses across the country is disgusting and unacceptable. And we have to, every leader in this country, every political official, every citizen of good conscience, has to speak out and say that this is not who we are in America, and we've got to have accountability, and that's what my colleagues and I are going to be working on.
I am curious, Senator. I am loath to say anything good about an SEC school because of the Big Ten rules, but have you ever had anything, any anti-Semitic outbursts at LSU or any other school in Louisiana?
No, and I don't believe we'd tolerate that. And if it happened at my alma mater, which is LSU, I'd be down there myself to stop it. I mean, this is outrageous. We have Jewish students who have actually been physically assaulted. They've been harassed. They've been intimidated and threatened. What we need to be doing is, I love the clip Tom Cotton, my friend Tom, said it before your break. We need to revoke federal funding to these universities if they cannot keep control. We need to revoke these student visas for these violent protesters. You don't have a right to be here and to do this, but Jewish students have a right to be able to peacefully attend classes. They're trying to get an education, and this is just madness. And, you know, I've seen some of these man-on-the-street interviews with some of these kids who are protesting. You and I both know the vast majority of them have no idea what they're talking about. They don't know the facts. Some of them are denying that October 7th even happened. I mean, it's ridiculous, and we're relying on and calling upon and demanding these university officials to get control of the situation. Is just completely out of control right now.
You know, Mr. Speaker, ignorance is a problem. I don't believe any of these students know that Israel is the original anti-colonial state. They were under the British mandate after Arthur Balfour promised a homeland for the Jews before the Holocaust. It finally came to pass in 1948. They threw off the British mandate. Yes, there are other failed colonial, anti-colonial states around the world, but Israel has thrived. So I'm glad you're doing this, and I can't believe anyone would be opposed to it. Have any Democrats objected to your going to Colombia?
Well, they may be mumbling that. They've not. I haven't seen it publicly, at least some of my colleagues. But I'll tell you that the real problem we have right now is that we're not getting strong leadership, obviously, from the White House or even some Democrats in Congress. I mean, the White House is caving to the anti-Semitic, I call it the pro-Hamas wing of the party now. They've backpedaled on their support for Israel. I mean, and you've got members of Congress who refuse to denounce even the chance to death to America. They just go silent. They won't call that out. And some members, or Democrat members of Congress, are even calling these anti-Semitic mobs, you know, peaceful protesters and defending the harassment, intimidation, and all the rest. So it's really become a serious problem, and they're allowing mob rule to overtake the American ideals of free speech and the free exchange of ideas and the free exercise of religion. This is not who we are.
Mr. Speaker, I've got some favorite members, like Michael Aller. He's a member of the centrist Republicans. David Joyce, center-right. Chip Roy, right-wing. Do you have a, within the Republican five families, have you got a good representation going with you to Columbia, or is it just you?
Oh, no, I've got it. I've got, Lawler will be there today. He represents New York, and Nicole Malliotakis and several others of the New York delegation who will be gathering there. And look, I tip my hat to my friends and colleagues there. They have been very consistent. I mean, those who are in the proximity of these universities have been very active and very engaged. And look, the House has taken action. We've acted to address anti-Semitism. We the House Education and Workforce Committee, as you know, has conducted these important oversight hearings of colleges and their leadership. Some of them have gone viral online and been seen around the world because they're failing to protect Jewish students on their campus. We passed a few pieces of legislation, the Deterrent Act, which shines light on foreign money influencing American universities. We passed the No Immigration Benefits for Hamas Terrorist Act. Yes, it's exactly as what it sounds. It would remove illegals who supported Hamas terrorist attacks on October 7th. But look, we passed this legislation, Hugh. Here's the problem. It all faces a common fate. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer controls the upper chamber in the Senate, and he is so focused on calling for new elections in Israel, he can't be bothered to protect Jewish students here at home.
I agree with that, and good on you for drawing attention to this and going up there. Couple of related questions, Congressman. You have an unwieldy caucus, and everybody knows that. And you've got some members on the Rules Committee. Olivia Beavers and I were talking about this earlier today. You've got Representative Norman, who's always a thorn in your side. Tom Matthews, my least favorite congressman, along with a couple more. Are you going to make some changes on Rules Committee? I like Chip Roy. I'm glad he's on there. But are you going to make some changes on the Rules Committee to make your life easier?
Well, look, we've got a delicate balance right now. Hugh, I've got the smallest majority in U.S. history, famously. Everyone knows that. Now I have a one-vote margin. So when you have such a slim margin, you know, there are actions and then there are reactions and reverberations from the actions. It's a very delicate balance. If I start kicking people off committees right now, it's likely that I cause more problems than I solve. And so what I'm trying to do every day is manage this team. You know, people ask me all the time, Hugh, I was at a big event in Dallas last night, and they said, why do the Democrats seem to stick together more than the Republicans? I said, it's actually pretty easy. The explanation is this. The Democrats think and act like a union. They're collectivists. You know, they move in a herd. Many of them are not deeply principled or philosophical folks anyway, and so you can command them, and they'll move as social animals, the socialists, right? We, on the other hand, rugged individualist, and we're deeply principled and philosophical, and it's difficult to get us to move in tandem sometimes. That's a blessing. I love that part, except when you have a one-vote margin. And so, you know, I'm working every day to get the team together to understand the stakes. I think they do, and I think we're going to get this job done, deliver for the people. And Hugh, I believe we're going to have an extraordinary election cycle in November. I think we're going to grow the House majority, make this job easier. We're going to win back the Senate, and I think Donald Trump's going back to the White House. We'll be able to turn this thing 180 degrees.
When you went down and saw former President Trump, how did the conversation go? Do you think you two would work together if he's back in the White House? Because I think he's going to win. The numbers today from Bloomberg are astonishing. He's ahead in every swing state by 10 points in North Carolina, by 7 and 8 in Arizona and Nevada. He's running away with it, and I have a column in the Post today about vice presidential choices that will really accelerate that. What is he upbeat about it? Do you think he's going to win big?
I do. I think he's going to win big, and I think it's going to be historic. And I've known him now for 8 years. We came to Washington at the same time in January 2017, and we have a very close relationship. And I've enjoyed that. And I think it's important. It's going to be critical going forward when the new Congress and the new term begins in January that the Speaker of the House and the President work in tandem on a principled, you know, agenda that's aggressive. We have so many things to fix. And I told him, Hugh, recently in a conversation, I said, Mr. President, I'm going to state the obvious. In your next term, you could be the most consequential president of the modern era because there are so many things to fix. I think he understands that. He's thinking a lot about the importance of this and what his legacy will be. And I think it's going to be extraordinary.
I'm going to put my bid in early for both shipbuilding capacity, but in reconciliation, conditioning federal money to any state on their having a vibrant school choice program. I don't know what Louisiana does, but school choice is the way of the future, Mr. Speaker. Are you on board with that?
100%. And I visited recently with Betsy DeVos, our friend who was the education secretary in the last Trump administration. She's been a champion of that as well. And there are some grand ideas on the table. But I agree with you. The federal funding, the power of the purse is the big thing that Congress has to help enforce that. And I think there needs to be dramatic reform at the Department of Education on the federal level and all the rest. We need to restore and return choice to parents and control over the public school systems as back down to the local and state level so that bureaucrats and ivory towers in Washington are not making these radical demands on the people. There's a lot of reform that needs to be done.
And control of the campuses again. I hope there's no federal money going to Columbia, and I hope you start taxing their endowment. Speaker Johnson, safe travel to New York today. You're going to need your security on that campus, but I'm glad you are going, and I'm glad you are taking that message. Look forward to talking to you again, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for joining me this morning.
Thank you, my friend.
I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, joined by former Secretary of State, former Director of Central Intelligence, Mike Pompeo. Secretary Pompeo, welcome back. Good to talk to you.
Good morning. It's great to be with you here. It's great to be back on the show again.
Now, I assume you approve of the Senate approving the $95 billion security budget last night. Do you approve of how much it was? Did we spend enough? For example, there's a giant total of $95 billion, $300 million for shipyards.
So, look, it's a good step in the right direction for things that matter to America. We can all argue about the right amount, but I'm glad that it passed. It will keep America more safe, more prosperous in the years ahead. But Hugh, it's not just about the money. One of the things that has been too little discussed is, great, now we've provided these resources to our adversaries, right? To our allies. That's great. We should remember that our adversaries in each of those strategic areas of operations, the Chinese Communist Party, money to Taiwan, the Russians, to killing Ukrainians to Ukraine and to our Israeli allies to push back against Iran. Now we need to unleash them. Now we need to actually let them use the tools, the weapons, and the money that we've provided to win, to actually defeat our adversaries, not to just kick this can down the road. So 2 years from now, you and I are having the exact same conversation saying, how do we use defense to deter? You have to hold your adversaries at risk. You have to hold something they value at risk. And if we don't use these resources or permit our allies to use these resources in a way that can do that, this will have done far less good than it could have.
Mr. Secretary, you have been succeeded by Tony Blinken. Secretary Blinken has not yet announced, but it is rumored that the State Department, by good leaks, is about to sanction a unit in the Israeli Defense Forces, something we have never done, to my knowledge, any time. What is your advice to your successor on that subject of sanctioning our allies?
I hope he'll reconsider and not do what I am confident he's being told to do by the Palestinian Bureau of the State Department that sits in Israel today. I know those folks. Remember, we consolidated when we moved the embassy to Jerusalem, that particular organization that had responsibility for covering Judea and Samaria. This is a radical pro-left group of people at State Department. I hope he'll decline their recommendation to sanction an ally who is attempting to fight an adversary that killed 1,000 of its own people, and an ally that is trying to defend and defeat an adversary that's still holding Americans hostage. I pray the Americans are still alive, all the hostages. That's just insanity. Meanwhile, they had lifted the terror designation on the Houthis. This is completely backwards. It misunderstands the threat and the risk, and it equivocates morally between these two, between Iran and Israel, and that's unforgivable.
You know, Secretary Blinken, when he was abroad at NATO, made an astonishing statement that Israel risked becoming like Hamas. And I thought that was preposterous. What was your reaction to it?
Yeah, that's what I was just getting at. It's not only preposterous, it's dangerous, and dangerous not just for Israel, but for the world. When the United States doesn't understand the difference between the people of the Jewish homeland in Israel, who are doing nothing more than trying to keep their own country safe, and an Iranian regime in the form of Hamas terrorists invades their country and kills barbarically 1,000 people. When you begin to describe these two in the same moral terms, that is so inconsistent with the American tradition, and it will come back to harm us, because the world will see America no longer has the moral compass to call good and evil what they are. And I saw that and was deeply disappointed and very concerned for the security of America.
The moral compass is broken, not just at the State Department. It's broken on campuses, at Columbia, most obviously, but at NYU, at Harvard, at Michigan. Both of my alma maters are compromised. You went to West Point. In fact, you were first in your class at West Point. I don't think they had many sit-ins in the West Point quad, did they?
not very many. And if you tried it, it lasted maybe 20 seconds, you, something like that.
Okay. So, but you did go to Harvard Law, and Harvard Law has got some students there who've been involved in assaulting Jewish students. What do you make of the mess on the campuses? This is not 1968. This is a good versus evil fight in Israel and Gaza versus Hamas. What do you make of what's going on?
This is a little bit of the chickens coming home to roost. When you refuse to teach in your schools in America that this is an exceptional nation, when you force the 1619 Project on them, when you teach them that America is no better than other countries, that we've frankly been a problem in the world, not a solution for the good of humanity, this is what you get, Hugh. You get quasi-grown-ups, kids in college, and faculty members that don't understand the difference between the freedom of speech on a campus and truly threatening behavior that has put at risk Jewish kids on campuses. And when you have a White House and a Secretary of Education that aren't prepared to do what they could do to put these things down, whether that's using security or coercion through federal funding, if you're not going to use the tools of power you have to tell these folks, this is not freedom of speech. I'm happy to have people say whatever it is on their mind, but you can't go threaten a group of students on campus and then have to close your school down, as Columbia has had to do, take classes online because you're prepared to defend basic rule of law principles. It's indecent, Hugh, and it's un-American, and I hope that we will find leaders in the years ahead that will put a stop to this.
I've got Dave McCormick coming up on the show, and I've also got the new Bloomberg poll that shows former President Trump a point ahead in Pennsylvania, 10 points ahead in places like, I think it's Nevada, that he's got a 10-point lead. We have to win this election cycle. What is it going to be about? Do you think it's going to be about these trials, or is it going to be about national security?
I think it will be a little bit about each of those. But I mostly think it will be about the direction that people want to take America. Some of the issues, frankly, we've just been talking about. I was in Indiana yesterday supporting Jim Banks, who's running for the United States Senate there. I'm confident he's going to win. We need him in the United States Senate. Jim's a great conservative Reagan Republican. What I heard from people when I was there yesterday is they just watch this White House refuse to think about America in the way they know it to be, as a fundamentally decent nation, prepared to defend its borders, enforce the rule of law, not to drive costs higher by making silly statements abroad that cause multiple wars to break out. I think those are the things. Basic competence and leadership in the White House is what I think this election will turn on in the presidential race and in these Senate races, including in the race in Pennsylvania. Dave McCormick, my 40-year friends, we were cadets at the same time at West Point a long time ago, Hugh, and we need people like Dave in the Senate, too.
I will ask him about that. Now, every day the former president comes out and he gets like 3 minutes and he hits the prosecution. And today the New York Times has an op-ed blasting the prosecution. You're a pretty good lawyer one time, Harvard lawyer. This is an out-of-bounds prosecution. This is a political show trial. Do you think it's helping the former president because he can't campaign at the same time everyone realizes, I think everyone who's in the middle realizes, this is an absurd prosecution?
It's definitely the case that reasonable people all concede that this is a political stunt, that, frankly, the whole world is watching you. I've been traveling. I was in the Middle East and in Asia. The whole world's watching, saying, what the heck is going on in the United States where you're prosecuting the president for this garbage? So I think people can see that. Look, it may help marginally when it comes time for people to go to the voting booth. I don't, frankly, know the answer to that for sure, but it's unfair to not let the Republican candidate for the presidency go campaign and compete and tell his story to the American people about why he ought to be the president of the United States again. It is so unfair, so indecent, and so dangerous for our republic when we've now had a party resort to having their political leaders put on trial a candidate for president of the United States.
Last question, since you've been abroad. Do people abroad notice that President Biden is infirm? Because he is absolutely infirm, and it's impossible to hide it. The vice president is simply not competent. Her numbers are even worse than the president's. But do the people abroad notice both those things, that the president is infirm and the vice president is incompetent?
Of course they do. It's readily apparent to them. A year ago, maybe, Hugh, maybe a year and a half ago, it was whispered. Right. It was, they would mention it. They'd say it in a small circle. Now it's common knowledge. It's spoken about relatively openly that the United States president and the person who's a heartbeat away from the presidency are not prepared to actually engage, converse, argue, make, to listen, to actually address the global challenges that are upon the world today. They're watching this world come unglued. They see the United States incapable of holding it together. And they are frightened not only for our country and what it has done for them throughout these years, but they're frightened for their own country because they all know that American leadership matters. And when it is absent, their people are in danger as well.
30 seconds, Mr. Secretary. Do you think President Biden is making the choices that Secretary Blinken is announcing, or is it Secretary Blinken and Jake Sullivan basically running, along with the chief of staff, his triumvirs, the national security policy of the United States?
I think President Biden has blessed every decision that is made. I'm sure these recommendations are coming to him. And I think that President Biden needs to own every one of these decisions. He's the commander in chief. They are his.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, thank you for coming back. I'm glad you're back from your travels safely, and I will look forward to having you back again soon. Thank you for campaigning for Republicans across the country. I'll be right back. America, stay tuned. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'm joined now by the successor in interest to Mike Gallagher, in the David Dreyer Honorary Chair, Congressman Michael Waltz. Congressman, welcome. Good to have you.
Hey, good to be with you, Hugh. And, I think my Army boots, filling those Marine shoes is an honor. So thank you.
I want the audience to understand a couple of things. Number one, we began in 2000 with David Dreyer doing a weekly segment. When he retired, he passed the baton to John Campbell. When John Campbell retired, he passed the baton to Mike Pompeo. When Mike Pompeo got picked to the CIA, he passed it to Gallagher. And when Gallagher retired, he tapped Michael Waltz. It turns out that Michael Waltz has my son on his staff. That's not why he's doing this. It's because Gallagher named him. But I'm glad he did. Congressman, would you give the audience a little bit of background on you so that they know why Gallagher tapped you?
Yeah. Well, thanks. as you know, Hugh, I've served for 27 years as a Green Beret, served all over Africa, the Middle East, multiple tours in Afghanistan. But interestingly, I guess, the Green Berets and Navy SEALs have reserve units. So my day job for many years was in the Bush administration, in the Pentagon under Rumsfeld and Gates, and eventually in the White House. And I had this fascinating back and forth between there I was in the White House Situation Room, and then I had to be the only idiot in Washington that had to go do the strategy when I got mobilized that I had just written. And now obviously serve in Congress on the Armed Services Committee, on the Intel Committee, on the Foreign Affairs Committee. And I have seen this nation's national security inside and out from every angle that one could imagine. And I've never seen the threats like they are today.
Now, I've got some specifics to run through, but out of the box, Congressman, when you wrote the great book, Citizen Soldier Diplomat, about being in Afghanistan as a Green Beret, do the Israeli troops in Gaza face a more difficult situation or the same situation that you had to deal with in Afghanistan?
Well, I think they're dealing with the same tactics in many ways. I mean, terrorists, whether they're ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or Hamas, have long, for decades, hid behind civilians and deliberately are willing to sacrifice civilians, which they believe is perfectly fine because it's all in the name of their extremist ideology, right, to sacrifice civilians to meet their ends tactically and strategically. I've been literally shot at behind women standing in burqas with the terrorists hiding behind them, and you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you don't shoot back, you're just going to keep taking fire. If you shoot back and you kill civilians, they'll literally videotape it and then use it for propaganda. The problem with Hamas and now in Gaza is Hamas is doing it at scale, and they're doing it in a densely packed urban area, which makes it all the more difficult. And I've worked with the Israelis. They know the propaganda will be used against them, and they are doing everything they can to avoid civilian casualties. But Hamas is literally willing to sacrifice its own people to turn public opinion against the Israeli government and the IDF. And sadly, Hugh, I think it's working.
It is right now. Speaker Johnson is coming on next hour to talk about his planned trip to Columbia today to confront the anti-Semites up there and to talk to the Jewish students. Are you amazed by this? I'm kind of stunned that American campuses have devolved into hothouses of Hamas supporters.
Well, I think we all are somewhat stunned, but, you know, maybe a little surprised, but not shocked. If you follow critical theory and particularly critical race theory that is so infused so many of our campuses, when they view the world through the lens of oppressed and oppressor, the Israelis are the oppressor and the Palestinians are the oppressed. And when they look at the Israelis as white and the Palestinians as brown and people of color, when, you know, they have this kind of binary view of the world, and that's why you see terms like apartheid government, you know, used in terms and colonialist used to describe the Israelis. It's not that surprising, but the fact that that these protests have sustained, what I want to know is how many foreign students, how many of those students out there protesting are actually here on visas, and what kind of influence operation is going on behind the scenes?
Well, when all the tents appear to be coming from the same manufacturer, you do have to think there's some organization there. If I can turn to the Intel Committee, you're on Intel, Armed Services, and Foreign Affairs. On Intel, you have access to things that other people don't. You had a look at the Hur documents, and I noted that you put out a tweet about the Hur. Special Counsel Robert Hur investigated Joe Biden and the documents he had. What were you trying to communicate in that tweet, Congressman Waltz? What did you see that made your eyes roll back?
Well, just how classified these documents were. I've been doing this for 30. I've had a clearance for 30 years in White House, Pentagon, now in Congress, out in the military. There were code words on there that I had never even seen before. And what people need to understand is, yes, they may have been from his time as vice president. So the information may be a little old, but the access, the methods of how we got it, if those were exposed, could be incredibly damaging. So So what I've asked of the intelligence community, as has the chairman, Mike Turner from Ohio, what damage was done? Who was flowing in and out of the Biden Center when these things were just sitting out in boxes and filing cabinets? The Chinese-funded Biden Center at University of Pennsylvania, by the way, and Lord knows who Hunter Biden had coming in and out of the garage, the office, and everywhere else from Kazakhstan, Russia, or you name it. So, you know, what would be the implications of these sources and methods were exposed, and who had proximity and access?
Let's remember, we have Pittsburgh Steelers fans, so we always we fine our guests on this segment $10 every time they use an acronym. You haven't used an acronym yet, but you did refer to code words, and code words are something I'm familiar with because I had a clearance long ago and far away when I was a kid, and yep. It was SCI, and I had a number of code words for domestic counterterrorism, but I did not have foreign code words for that which was gathered abroad. Would you explain the intel system and how it works? It's a pie chart,
right. Well,
and that's
you have
what
the
I use.
Three basic, you have the three basic kind of classifications, confidential, secret, and top secret. Then above top secret, you have SCI that you mentioned, secret compartmented information, and then you have actual individual compartments. Some of these compartments I had never heard of, I had never seen. Some of the documents were labeled Vice President and President eyes only, meaning even the most senior cleared staff couldn't see it. Some of them, they had sensitive handling across, meaning often the briefer would come in with only one copy. I mean, that is incredibly sensitive information. And the reason it's so sensitive, again, is not because the information could get out tomorrow. It's how we got it. So what I use as an example is, for just as an example, Putin may wear blue underwear on Thursday. Not that critical of information, but there's only one person in the world that lays his clothes out. So if they know that we know that, that person is toast. So it's that kind of sensitivity. And I just want to push back on this narrative that the Biden documents were old. They were probably back from the Cold War or what have you. Who cares? No big deal. The guy was so old and infirm that he couldn't be prosecuted. Baloney. These documents were incredibly relevant. They were incredibly classified. He knew that he had them, as he admitted to his biographer, and he should be prosecuted for it. And since he's now president, then if he can't be prosecuted, then we should look at an impeachment. They were that serious, Hugh, but yet, of course, the mainstream media just wants to sweep it away.
Now, let's stay on that for a moment. Have the other members of the Intel Committee looked at the documents to your knowledge yet? Because I think this is a big story that people have genuinely missed, that you went and looked at them. You know what's in them. You can't say what's in them, but you know that it was very bad that he had them. Have the other members of Intel, as Chairman Turner and others, looked at the HER documents yet?
Chairman Turner has looked at them. Other members are going down into the compartmented room to take a look. And here's the thing. These are only a portion of the documents. These are only the ones that were derived through intelligence sources through the community. There are others that we are still fighting for example, that are White House derived. They may be a memo from the National Security Advisor to the Vice President that has very compartmented information in it, for example. That we're still fighting for, and we're also still fighting for his many notebooks where he took notes in classified meetings. We're still trying to get those as well. So we don't even have the full tranche. The list of documents is available. Go to Appendix A of the HER report, and you will see some of these classification levels. It's a list of the documents, and it wasn't just one or two. It was dozens and dozens.
Congressman Waltz, if you had taken one of those documents out of this skiff that the Intel Committee uses and you took it to your office, could you be prosecuted?
Oh, absolutely. As senators, as members of Congress, when we go in, they are hard copies and they are all numbered and they are all collected before we come out. I don't know how in the hell he was traveling back and forth on the Acela. He had them shoved in his bag. I mean, who knows how he got them from a skiff in the Senate all the way to his place in Rehoboth. And then the other thing just worth reminding, President Trump, by comparison, is governed by the Presidential Records Act. And the National Archives have briefed us, there have been over 80 instances where members of Congress, cabinet officials, what have you, have had some kind of issue with classified documents. But the president, it is debatable, and it is covered in that law, what is his versus what is the government. And that debate has gone back and forth with every single president. By contrast, Biden, as vice president, as senator, was not governed by that law. And as an original classification authority, as the president of the United States, he was not governed and therefore, in my view, absolutely should be prosecuted.
Well, I'm glad to have you. Congratulations on becoming the legatee of David Dreyer. He'll be very happy. Congressman Dreyer always insists that we have quality in this stop shop. And I appreciate your becoming the new Mike Gallagher, the new David Dreyer. Michael Waltz from Florida. Congressman Waltz, thank you. I'll be right back. America, stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined now by Dave McCormick. He is going to be the next senator from Pennsylvania. Good morning, Dave. Welcome back to the program. Good to see you.
Hey, good to see you, Hugh.
What is the website? I want to start first. What is the website where people help you out? Because this is the key Senate race.
DaveMcCormickPA.com. And we're barnstorming across the Commonwealth and anxious to see people all the way across our state.
You are batting cleanup today after Mike Pompeo and Speaker Johnson, both of whom. I didn't know you were in the same class with Speaker Pompeo. Who got more demerits, you or he?
Well, I got more demerits, and he had a much higher GPA.
Well, he is just back from being abroad, and he said it is now obvious to all our allies that President Biden is infirm. When you talk to the people that you meet all across Pennsylvania, do they share that opinion that our president, and we pray for him, he's just not up to this job?
100%. And I think the thing that I'm sure Mike Pompeo mentioned is we've lost deterrence. Deterrence is having power, strength, having the will to use it, and then creating uncertainty in the minds of your adversaries about your willingness to use power to deter them from taking action against you. And we saw it with Afghanistan, with the horrible handling of Ukraine, with the Chinese surveillance balloon, and then most recently with the lack of response to all these attacks in the Middle East. And our adversaries think we're weak, and they're testing us and challenging us. And it's a scary time because you have a man in the White House who just simply isn't up to the job.
Now, Dave McCormick, you're from Pittsburgh. I break the rule against Steelers fans coming on the show. But you've got a campaign in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. How does it feel in the big blue bubbles of Pennsylvania to keep the state on the balance beam?
Yep. Listen, the path to winning this election is clear. I've got to have a great turnout in the rural counties. There's 55 red counties in Pennsylvania, but I grew up in what they call the T, very conservative. I've got to have a great turnout, and I will. And there's lots of persuadable voters in southeast Pennsylvania and Allegheny County, and they're deeply distressed by the direction of the country. Inflation, 40-year high in inflation, prices are up 20%, 60% of Pennsylvanians live paycheck to paycheck. Those aren't just Republicans. Those are Democrats and independents. The wide open border, the crime in the streets of Philadelphia, the fentanyl crisis, all of these have led Pennsylvanians of all political stripes to say, my God, we're in trouble. And 80% of them think our country is headed in the wrong direction, and they need leadership. And that's my campaign. My campaign's about leadership. I'm a very straightforward guy. I've led in the military and business, and I'm going to Washington to make a difference and show leadership.
Dave McCormick, I use the mnemonic ABCDEII. For appeasement, the border, crime, DEI, and inflation. Of that issue set, and that is the issue set, which one comes up the most? Israel is also on the eye. If people, what comes up the most when you're talking to small events?
When I started the campaign October 1st, it was inflation. And today, inflation's a close second, and it's border. And I think the reason border has become such a big issue in a place like Pennsylvania is because we see the disorder. We see the chaos. We see the fact that, we have 13 sanctuary counties or cities in Pennsylvania. We see the fundamental unfairness. And then this fentanyl crisis, Hugh, I can't understate the significance of that. 4,000 Pennsylvanians last year. We lost almost 100,000 nationally last year from fentanyl. As you know, in 8 years of war in Vietnam, we lost about 50,000 Americans. This is a crisis of just unprecedented proportion, and it's gotten much worse under Joe Biden and Bob Casey. Bob Casey's been weak on the border, supported sanctuary cities, hasn't voted for funding for our border patrol, hasn't stood up for the need for efforts to stop this fentanyl crisis. It's spiraling out of control, and that's why the border has become number one.
Quick exit question, Dave McCormick. Dave McCormick, PA.com. You jumped out of airplanes. You were in the 82nd Airborne, so you're not afraid of much. I think Bob Casey is afraid to debate you. Have you set up any debates with Bob Casey, the invisible senator?
There have been a number of invitations. We don't have any debates scheduled yet, but my goal will be to debate him as many times as possible. I will accept all debate invitations because I think it's important that the people of Pennsylvania see the difference between a guy who's been in public office 30 years, 18 years in the Senate, Hugh, and I'm not exaggerating when I say he hasn't had a significant accomplishment, and he's voted 98% of the time with Joe Biden. And so when you look at spiraling inflation or border or crime or the war on energy, you can thank Bob Casey. And, you know, I'm running as an outsider, somebody who has never held political office, someone who doesn't owe anybody anything. I don't owe the president anything. I don't owe Mitch McConnell anything. I'm fighting for the people of Pennsylvania, and I'd be honored to do it.
Dave McCormick, PA.com. Go and help them out. Keep coming back. Want to remind everyone, a great sponsor of the program is MyPhDWeightLoss.com. Generalissimo went on that program more than a year ago, lost 50 pounds. He's kept it off. And stress eating is not allowed, I don't believe, even though we're under a lot of...
You're tempted to this week, aren't we?
Everybody is. I'm sure they give you tricks of the trade to combat that, because that's one of the habits. You broke that habit. You're not going by Del Taco or Taco Bell.
Have not. No.
You haven't relapsed.
Have not relapsed.
And that is and it's healthy, it's wise, it's productive.
864-644-1900.
That's
864-644-1900.
MyPhDWeightLoss.com. As we head into the holidays, maybe you want to take off a few pounds before we get there. That might be the best way to do it. MyPhDWeightLoss.com.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Joined by an old friend, Jeff Crank. Jeff Crank is running for Congress in Colorado. Right now, he's a member of the Americans for Prosperity team, Bidenomics.com. And were your ears burning this week, Jeff, because I was talking about you with Akash?
They were a little bit, Hugh. How are you?
I'm great. Good to see you again, and congratulations on getting back into the fray. You came up a little bit short when you ran in Colorado a decade ago, and I was at your side campaigning. I love that day. I remember that day. You're back in. Tell us where the district is. Tell us what the issues will turn on in the primary.
Sure. Well, thank you, Hugh. You were a great supporter back then, and I appreciate all you do. Well, listen, the district is Colorado Springs. It used to be a much bigger district. Now, because we've grown so much, it's essentially El Paso County, Colorado, which is Colorado Springs, and it's five military installations that are here. And, you know, citizens flat out are very upset, just like they are anywhere in the United States, over immigration and over the lack of control over our border. And the lack of control in spending in their daily lives are out of control because of these failed Biden policies.
Now, Jeff, because you've been working for AFP, Americans for Prosperity, for a long time, because you know the facts of Bidenomics.com, you're able to talk with these folks. But how has the district changed in the decade that you've been working for AFP and Doug Lamport, who I believe has endorsed you? Am I right about that?
Well, he hasn't quite yet, but I think he's going to. He's been very helpful to me.
I have been very, I'm out front. I'm signed on. I want Jeff in Congress because I want some serious people in Congress who know about spending. How has Colorado Springs changed? Because Colorado's changed in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Well, Colorado's certainly changed, and Colorado Springs has changed quite a bit. There's been a lot of migration to Colorado because of failed policies in other states. California, of course, being one of those, and lots of folks moving here. Sometimes they bring their bad ideas with them and think that their bad ideas are good ideas, and they're not. So Colorado has changed a lot, and I think Colorado Springs, which is still, it's an R plus 11 district. It's still conservative, but I do think you have to speak to people in a positive way, not a negative way, not something that's destructive, but they want to know what your positive vision is for the United States and for Colorado.
Now, talk to me a little about education in Colorado. You have had the Colorado Springs School District on your mind for a long time. You had small children when I was campaigning with you 10 years ago, 14 right. years ago. Now they're grown. What did you make of the Colorado Springs School District, and what ought the federal government to say about education going around on the spending side?
Well, certainly that education, we've seen that so much over the last few years, especially since COVID. Parents really gaining control here. And the school districts in Colorado Springs used to not be very bad, but you're starting to see some of this wokeness creeping in to the school districts here. And there's only one way to solve that. And that's, as you know, Hugh, you've been such a big advocate for it. There's only one way to solve that. And that's to give parents the choice of where to send their children to school. And as soon as we do that, we will have better performing schools, because that competition lifts all boats. And that's what we're starting to see in state after state. Frankly, Colorado, with its sort of leftist legislature and leftist governor, have resisted some of that good change that we've seen in states like Arizona and Utah and some of our surrounding states around the country. Those are the states that are going to perform better and have better schools, and the states that don't should not. And the U.S. Department of Education ought to be gone. I'm going to sign on immediately to the bill that ends and eliminates the Department of Education at the federal level.
You know, I've talked with former President Trump about this. If the House stays Republican and the Senate flips, he will get two big swings in Reconciliation 1 and Reconciliation 2. In one of those swings, I hope he ties no federal funding for schools unless school choice is part of the state's DNA. I don't think Colorado would pass. There are some great charter schools in Colorado. I've been to a number of them, but it's not a routine thing, right? You have to fight your way through the bureaucracy to get one set up.
Yeah. Well, we used to lead the country. Actually, Colorado, under Governor Bill Owens, who has endorsed me, by the way, former Governor Bill Owens, he kind of led the way in some of the charter school reforms and things. And we were great on that. But Colorado's taken a bit of a left turn. And because of that, we're resisting some of this change, some of this free market change, and being beholden to the labor unions when it comes to K-12 education. And that's going to cost our children, and it's going to mean bad things for education in Colorado.
Jeff, what is, I want to make sure, I almost failed broadcasting 101 there. What is your campaign website? Where do people go to help? Because I'm on in the Springs for 3 hours, so they can hear you. How do they find you?
You bet. JeffCrankForCongress.com. JeffCrankForCongress.com. They can go there, Hugh. This is a race. Obviously, we need resources. And we raised $300,000 in the first quarter, which speaks to the campaign that we're running. That's a very good number for the first quarter that you're in a race. But we need those resources. So if folks can go there, they can learn more about our campaign at JeffCrankForCongress.com.
All right. Now talk to me a little bit about the difference in campaigning from the first time you ran 14 years ago. And now it's all micro targeting. Now it's all using the algorithm to find the people who are going to turn out to vote. And when is the primary, Jeff?
Sure. The primary is June 25th. Of course, in Colorado, we have an all mail-in ballot. So those ballots go out on June 4th. So we've got a 3-week long election day, which is always a bit of a challenge. The difference, it really is stunning, the difference between now and then. Obviously, we were trying to run a grassroots campaign, still running a grassroots campaign, and it's about going out. We walk precincts every weekend for sure, and all of that. But it is a money game. It's about raising money so that you can get your message out. And, you know, we've been fortunate. We've been endorsed by the Colorado Springs Gazette here in Colorado Springs, which is the newspaper, of course. And then Americans for Prosperity Action has actually endorsed us, and they're out doing good things, it seems, and out walking precincts and doing some digital media for us as well. So, you know, it is something that is very, very different kind of a campaign style. You almost just, I hate to say it, but you just have to kind of bunker yourself down, be very disciplined, and raise the resources you need for the campaign.
This is a no-brainer for Colorado. I was working for Jeff 14 years ago because he was smart and young. Now he's smart and middle-aged, but he still would be great for Colorado. And so I want people to get out there. Are your kids going to – we campaign with your kids. So I just want to know if they're ready to hit the pavement again, because 14 years a long time. You got teenagers now, or maybe they're in college. I don't know. But are they going to go out there on the streets with you again?
Hugh, we have grown so old. My son is now a lawyer in Denver. He just got out of law school, and he's practicing law now. So that's how old we are. And my daughter's out of high school now. So yeah, they are, and they're great. You know, this is such a decision that you got to make with your family. My wife Lisa and I sat down. We prayed about it. We thought about it. That America needs good people to go there, and our fight for liberty has been a long one. I've dedicated my life to that. And it's all for naught if we just let people go to Washington who aren't going to do good things and be good people. And so we're all in the fight. My son, you know, back then, he kind of rode around and became the center of attention. And this time I expect him to pound 4x8 signs into the ground for me and use those muscles that he built up.
You know what I like about this is that I've always said when you have small children, it's hard to be in Congress. One of the reasons I think Congressman Gallagher retired is he's got small kids, and small kids are very difficult. It's great to be in middle age and have your kids out of the house so that you can do all day, every day, what you need to do. Not sure that Lisa Crank is going to be thrilled about that, but you can campaign even more now, Jeff.
Yeah, that's right. And you know what, Hugh, I look at it this way. God has his plan, and I'm on his schedule, not mine. I ran those many years ago. We came up 800, just over 800 votes short. It just wasn't God's timing, even though maybe I thought it was time for me. God had a different plan, and he's just been he's given me so many blessings through my life, my family, my career, so many other things. And this just feels like the time that he thinks it's right. And so we're trying to do this in a way that honors him as well. And that's what's important.
Well, I'm so happy to endorse you a second time. This time you're going to win Jeff Crank. Jeff Crank for Congress.com. Help him out with a contribution, because we need good, solid conservatives from the Centennial State back in Washington, D.C. Jeff Crank for Congress.com. America, Mary Catherine Hamm joins me. She is the co-host of Getting Hammered, the podcast that has caused marital discord within the Hewitt household. Good morning, Mary Catherine. How are you?
Hello. Good morning. I apologize for bringing that to your doorstep.
I want you to know that because the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt was such a fan of Getting Hammered, I started to listen. Now we're not on the same schedule, right? I listen different times. So we start going out to talk about something, and I bring up Scope yesterday. By the way, first story. That is her sound effect that we both love. Where did you get that sound effect, by the way?
You know what? That's above my pay grade. My lovely producer, Jennifer, and the team are in charge of that. So.
Well, this sound
I did
effect.
I picked the theme song.
You picked the theme. I don't have the theme song ready, but I've got the sound effect ready. Okay. Have you ever used Scope in your life? Ever in your life used Scope?
Yes, but it's been a very long time. I would say that was more of an 80s endeavor.
It was very much a 70s and 80s thing. So when I heard you and Vic drinking Scope this week, I thought to myself, they're too young to have used Scope. So I thought about that. Next, you know what caused the real problem yesterday is that we went and saw Filthy Little Letter, Filthy Dirty Letter, whatever it is, a terrible movie. Don't go see it. Timothy Spall's in it. We went to see Timothy Spall, but it's terrible. But she says to me, you know, Vic Mattis loves food. I said, why do I get, he'll eat anything. Why don't you, I'm not particularly adventurous. Is it true Vic will eat anything? Any restaurant that he passes by, he'll eat?
Well, he's quite a foodie, but much like me, he's a real high-low person, right? So he can both enjoy the finer things in life. And this week, we did a Slim Jim tasting. So, like, we can do both. That's the beauty of Vic and me.
I can say at the age of 68, I have never had a Slim Jim, and I intend to go to my reward absolutely unrepentant of having never had a Slim Jim. Mary Catherine, I want to also show a picture.
When you get to the pearly gates and Jesus and St. Paul hands you a Slim Jim, you're just going to know then.
You're such a Protestant. It's not St. Paul, Mary Catherine.
I know.
You're such a Protestant. I know that. By the way, my favorite part of this week was that young people are discovering church again. Where did you guys find that out? Because I thought that was hilarious.
No, yes, that was fun. And by the way, this is what happens when you get me up before 7 and I haven't had my coffee. Things I know go out of my head. It was funny because there's a story about like, hey, you know what? It turns out that having a faith makes people more happy and less prone to depression. And Vic and I, who are both people of faith, despite my brain glitch just then, are like, oh, you don't say. And we talk about parenting on Getting Hammered. And one of the things we talk about is that I'm trying my best in this day and age to create a situation where, like, look, the utmost goal for my kids is not pure happiness. Struggle is really important. I've been through things in my life that have made me the person I am. But I do want to set them up to be more likely to have sort of intrinsic an understanding of who they are, to depend on something bigger than the world, bigger than social media, bigger than their friends, and that will result in them being steadier and happier adults. And that, like, the faith part of that is a huge part of our lives.
I wish more people would listen to that and just follow the advice. Doesn't matter if you believe or not, just find a church and go and take your kids. Mary Catherine, I have a picture I want to show you. It's a picture I picked up from our friend Guy. Here you are rocking some kind of pants on the Lebanon border. What are those pants?
First of all, Hugh, very big pants are in right now. Wide leg pants are very in. I will admit that with my flak jacket, it was maybe not the best combo there standing on the border in northern Israel. However, I did choose those pants because, you know, it's a warm climate. They were linen. I felt comfortable, but yes, big pants are in, and I just—it's like drug resistance. My pants just keep getting bigger and bigger because I'm used to the former size, and so now they're just like they're.
I was afraid that if you had to run and a gust of wind came away, you might float off like Mary Poppins. So that big pants are in that big of a pant.
Yes.
Okay, so Mary Catherine.
Oh, even bigger than that. Yeah.
I have a request. I don't know when you tape Getting Hammered. It's fabulous, by the way. I want everyone in America to download it, rate it, do all the stuff that you do with podcast. It's fabulous. When you do it, could you do one on Friday so I could listen to it on the long run on Saturday morning? I just want you to do it or release it on Saturday morning.
I will see what I can do, Hugh.
A weekend show.
Sketch.
Sort of like the Today Show has Weekend Today Show and everything else. And you could do weekend topics. I am personally annoyed when people tell me how to do my radio show because everybody's a producer. But I'm just saying, as a customer, that's my producer who's asleep right now. As you can see, he's nodded off. How often are you doing it, Mary Catherine?
We do it twice a week, and it comes out on Wednesdays and Fridays.
All right, so we want it three times a week with the Saturday edition. Final note, girls and women's sports. How many women's sports events did you attend at the University of Georgia, actually attend in person?
Well, I played in a bunch because I was on a competitive sports team, the lacrosse team. But I went to like a handful, 5 to 7. The gymnastics was really, really good.
There is a reason behind your conversation about Joe Biden that I want to talk about the next time. But in the meantime, go and subscribe to Getting Hammered. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by Olivia Beavers of Politico. Good morning, Olivia. How are you?
Morning, Hugh. I have one thing to raise with you early this morning.
Yes.
I think you went pretty easy on my waltz. I'm used to you ribbing Gallagher about sports, about what he's wearing, about acronyms. And Mike Waltz just waltzes in there, and it seems like so gentle and so welcoming for him.
Well, I am the first time that anyone gets – that's the David Dreyer chair. That segment's been on since I started the show in 2000. It went Dreyer to Campbell, and Campbell picked Pompeo. Pompeo picked Gallagher. Campbell picked Cotton. Cotton picked Pompeo. Pompeo picked Gallagher. Gallagher picked Waltz. So the first time around, I'm easy on him. It'll get tough. It's not because my son works for him, Olivia. That's not the reason. It's because...
just making sure.
It was just because, in fact, I've been blasting my son because the link didn't work for the video. Olivia, on a serious note, I have Speaker Johnson coming up. Are you going with him to Columbia?
Not today, but I will be following his speech this afternoon, which, is a pretty savvy decision on his part, because this is an issue that Republicans are able to rally around, and he's going to have other House Republicans with him. He's kind of coming off on a tough political time where he's facing the motion to vacate and some anger on his right flank for passing the foreign aid package. So I think that this is part of sort of the rehabilitation efforts of picking fights that Republicans generally agree on. And this is certainly one of them.
You know, Olivia, I don't know where Democrats are. I know there are three knuckleheads who want to take out the speaker. I think the rest of the caucus will exile them before they throw Speaker Johnson out. But again, motion to vacate can be brought by anyone. Yeah. I don't think he's in any trouble at all with the House conference generally. He's got a few knuckleheads who hate Ukraine on his case. But really, do you think that they're going to actually move forward with that? It would be an astonishingly stupid move to bring that motion right now.
I think it's pretty hard from where they've sort of positioned themselves to walk themselves back. They've already sort of said they plan to do it. The question is when. And right after the Ukraine aid vote sort of seemed like the optimal timing to do so. But it was also on a Saturday, so maybe you can't drive the news cycle. So they said they wanted to wait and see members going home and talking to their districts and see if that kind of builds pressure. I'm not sure it will, because you saw after Kevin McCarthy, there was much more of a sort of grassroots belief that he should not be speaker and kind of an interest in taking him out until after you saw him taken out. And then there was no plan in place. And so there were really sort of split views of people who might have previously wanted McCarthy out and then got what they wanted and had buyer's remorse. And so that's sort of, I think, fresh in the minds of some of the grassroots people who are watching Johnson, maybe not liking what he's doing, but also realizing this might be their option, at least through November.
Now, I'm not sure what Democrats would do. On the one hand, chaos in the caucus, even if it's brought about by a handful of members, is still good politics. On the other hand, nothing mm-hmm. would happen in the House. I'm not sure anything has to happen in the House before the election, does it?
No, and I mean, people can decide to move whenever they want. As for Democrats, it's interesting because some Democrats like Jared Moskowitz, some other kind of centrist Democrats that I've talked to, have indicated that they would support Johnson, either make themselves scarce on the day of the vote or find some sort of way to support him and argue that they're the ones preventing chaos from unfolding on the House floor. But a lot of Republicans don't seem to believe those statements, even if they're made publicly, because they said, we have to watch what Hakeem Jeffries says. If he says we vote to oust Johnson, and they argue also, why would we trust them when they're probably so close to actually being able to have a Speaker Jeffries? So they don't really believe the Democrats would support him, even though some Democrats are saying, you know, we don't want the chaos of another 3-week speakership vote that we saw in the past. So,
Olivia, do you have handy the number of or when the vacancies are filled? I believe Bill Johnson, who retired to become president of Youngstown State, I believe his vacancy is filled in June at the Ohio primary. I think the Gallagher vacancy is filled immediately upon the election in Wisconsin, so there won't be a lame duck with Democrats. So that's two more Republicans. Do you know about the other vacancies when they fill?
Not off the top of my head. I don't think anything until the first one is maybe the end of May. I'd have to go back to my notes on that one.
Because I think Johnson will get the support from the new members, certainly in Ohio. And so he'll build back up his advantage. So if the three knuckleheads want to strike, they have to strike now because they're going to lose their leverage. It's not really leverage. They're going to lose their ability to appear insane in public very quickly. And so if they don't come back and immediately lay that on the floor, nothing else is going to happen. Olivia Beavers, but I'm serious. Last question. I don't think anything really needs to happen before the election, does it, from the House? Because all the appropriations are passed.
They have the next set of appropriation bills that I think they're going to start working on, but they got through the big FISA government funding and foreign aid. So I think it's going to be yay, farm bill, and then...
Yeah, it's just hearings, and then the November elections will return the Republicans with at least the lame duck seats filled. I don't know if they'll take control of the House going into next year, given the knuckleheads. Olivia Beavers at Politico.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. 3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.